Hello, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of High Performance Pathways. I'm your host, Court Whitman. Today's show is sponsored by Big Sky Bravery. Big Sky Bravery provides high adrenaline recreational programming to our active duty special operations forces as a means to improve their psychological and emotional well-being and then return them to the fight for America. Because guess what, y'all? Being at war. And I know a lot of folks out there listening right now, we're talking about Court being at war. Hey man, our special operations forces are always at war. Being at war is taxing, and Big Sky Bravery exists to serve these folks and get their mind right and get them back to the fight for America. You can learn more about Big Sky Bravery at bigskybravery.org. And hey, if you want to help out our active duty special operations forces, I got a challenge for you today. Take 5 minutes and write a letter of Thanksgiving and send it to Big Sky Bravery. Attention, Josh McCain at 215 Quail Run, Unit A, Bozeman, Montana, 59718. And guess what? Your letter will be part of this psychological and emotional well-being programs that Josh is running out there, meaning it will be personally hand-delivered to one of our active duty special operations warriors while they're out there for a week-long program with Big Sky. Hey, check it out. This stuff's important to me. That's why they're my number one sponsor. For all listeners out there, High Performance Pathways is a purpose-built and specially selected collection of someone's experience as they discuss in their life how they've understood, discovered, and continue to chase high performance. This content is collected during a one-on-one interview, and then we share it with you. Why? Because I believe everyone has a different path to high performance. And hearing about the paths that other professionals have journeyed along is informative and inspiring. So, as your host, it's my intent to do 5 things for you on this episode. Number one, connect. I'm going to connect you to someone else so that you can build your professional relationships. But hey, you got to do the work. You got to reach out and connect with my guest to continue a conversation. Number two, I'm going to question to understand this man's experience. And then it's going to be shared with you so that we can raise your perspective as you walk through life. Fourth thing here I'm going to do for you as your host is I'm going to teach. I'm going to teach you in some way to increase your competence as you listen to what we're talking about. And number five, I'm going to inspire. Inspire some sort of a growth experience, an aha moment, something as you listen to this show to get you fired up about what you're doing. Maybe confirming things that you're doing in your life right now already, or maybe inspiring some sort of a shift or change. Hey, if you're still with me, check it out. One additional note to continue. This podcast, y'all, is raw, right? That means there's absolutely no post-production editing. We record live, and we deliver it to you exactly as it was recorded. My guest today, y'all, is Andy Schatzley. That's right. My man Andy is checking in with us today on the show. Let me give you a little bit of insight to the work professionally that this man has done in his life to date. And once I get into this bio, you'll know exactly why he's featured on today's show. Because Andy is all about sport, baseball specifically, as a coach, as a speaker, as a teacher, as an instructor. And you all know how important I think the role sport plays in what I call the non-traditional classroom in support of leader and managerial development. So here we go. Andy is the manager, and for folks outside the baseball world, that means head coach, y'all. Andy is the head coach of the Orem Owls, the advanced rookie ball affiliate of the LA Angels. And Andy has spent his entire adult life coaching, to include service as the associate head coach at Harding University for 7-8 years, head coach of the Outer Banks Daredevils and the Coastal Plains Summer Collegiate League, as an assistant baseball coach for Emporia State University, as the head coach of the El Dorado Broncos and the Jayhawks Summer Collegiate League, and as a graduate assistant for Lubbock Christian University. That's a long list of stops and places, and I kind of that's the life of a coach, which Andy will share with us as this conversation continues. So, you know, a lot of accomplishments too from this man. And I'll list a few here. 3 conference championships, 2 NAIA World Series appearances, national championship team in 2009, and as the National Baseball Congress national champions in 2009. As a professional, Andy was selected as the National Baseball Congress National Manager Head Coach, y'all, of the year. And Andy was the featured presenter on infield play for American Baseball Coaches Association multiple times, and multiple times as a speaker, as a presenter, as a teacher about the game of baseball for USA Baseball. I'm stoked to have Andy on the show here together today. I absolutely love baseball. And just for some context on me, I was an absolutely horrendous baseball player. I was horrible. It was not my game. Football was my game. But one of my brothers, Keith, was a phenomenal baseball player. He could straight yoke the ball. He was a hitter, son. And he actually played in college, was a freshman athlete of the year in college, and he holds the home run record for most home runs there at University of North Carolina here in Pembroke, North Carolina. And I was in the Army at the time here at Fort Bragg, and I'm sharing this story because it's the catalyst for my love for baseball. I was able to drive and see him play his entire college career. And it was just an incredible gift to be able to watch. Because something happens, in my opinion, when someone that's a member of your family is playing a sport. And for me, the afternoons eating peanuts in the stands, watching my brother play, will be forever etched in my mind. So, brother Andy, thanks for checking with us together today, man. And really just sharing for us some insights into the game of baseball as a player, as a coach, at the pro and college level, right? Really excited to kind of talk a little bit about the current economic environment with COVID-19 and its impact to sport. I mean, heck, I was watching NFL Network yesterday, and they're talking about all this stuff that they're putting in place to make sure these teams can field, a game for us this year. The opening day is tomorrow. We're laying this podcast down on July 23rd, 2020. So a lot to talk about that I think you could maybe share in and around that, because you're a pro coach right now. And really just in general, Andy, you're kind of chasing of high performance in your adult life. So thanks for being here, boss.
Man, thanks for having me. That it sounds like a lot. I sound a lot older than what I feel like I really am after you read all that stuff. And it sounds a lot better coming from you than kind of the way I remember it in my mind. But I've been very fortunate to be around, to be able to have several stops, like what you said, at several really incredible places. And more important than that, I've had a chance to be around a lot of really incredible people. So a lot of that stuff that you list, I would not necessarily attribute to myself. I was very happy to be along for the ride and have a chance to learn from some really impressive people, and really excited for this chance today. And also, too, all of that stuff pales into comparison to what you and all of our veterans have done for our country. So I'll flip it on you a little bit. And that's the one thing, I don't care what else I get in today publicly outside of thanking you and all of our forces for everything that they do.
Hey, man. All I can say is thank you, man, for that. I've gotten better at that as I've retired from the service when someone is thanking me for my service and the brothers and sisters I've served with. So everyone listening, if you're a veteran, shout out to you, your service, your commitment, by way of my man Andy here, as he just offers up some Thanksgiving. Hey, y'all, write that damn letter I talked about to Big Sky Bravery. It'll make a big difference if you're moved to give back in some way. And hey, man, as we're talking about people that have impact lives, I would be entirely upset with myself if I didn't mention how me and Andy were connected. Me and Andy were going on what, maybe a 2-week relationship at this moment in time.
Yes.
So shout out, man. 2 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, brother. Shout out to Jeff Steele. What an incredible human being. Me and Jeff served together at Teamworks Innovations there in Durham, North Carolina. Shoot, going back probably 3-4 years now, we've stayed in contact. And Jeff, as I understand it, is a close friend of you, Andy. You guys even coached together at one point. So, hey, man, shout out to that knucklehead, and just appreciate Jeff for brokering this intro, because I think what you've got to share with us today, man, is just going to be a gift to the audience.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a minute, hopefully. And he is of all the fortunate breaks that all of us get that have a chance to have any level of success, you know, if it was one of the more, not to kill him with flattery, maybe he'll never listen. But just so everybody else knows, one of the biggest breaks I ever got was getting a chance to work with him. I basically chased him around for 2 years and followed behind him, and he really taught me. I knew I wanted to work hard at it, but whenever you first break into an industry, you don't really know where to direct your energy. And he was a really incredible example for me, and has turned into a really close friend. So appreciate him. Absolutely. more than he knows.
Yeah, man. Thank God for friends. Cool, man. Hey, brother. So let's get rolling here. And I just love to get some insight. I mean, I just talked about your professional adult life. Didn't even comment on your playing days in college at all. You know, but let's take it back for a moment. And I want to talk about childhood, because I think our childhood experience is incredibly developmental. And I'm always curious, as I get high performers on this show, what their childhood looks like. Because I've seen all types. I've seen the broken home. I've seen, hey, man, don't even know my dad. I've seen, hey, don't even know my mom. And I've seen, hey, I grew up in the leave it to Beaver childhood. And if you're probably below the age of 30, you won't even get my metaphor there with leave it to Beaver. But it was like kind of the traditional white America home and the cul-de-sac. So, Andy, man, share with us, because I think it's insightful, partner. What was it like for you growing up? And as you kind of reflect on this question, you can take it wherever the heck you want to go with it. But I'd be really curious if you could bring into your sharing maybe some earliest role models or mentors or people that you aspired to imitate as you grew older.
People have asked me before from time to time, you know, did you go to college knowing that you wanted to be a coach, you know, or back whenever it was, most of the time it was recruits or parents that were asking me whenever I was working in college, you know, did you go to college knowing that you wanted to coach college baseball? And at the time, coaching professional baseball was such a far-fetched idea. It wasn't even something that I'd ever entertained before. And my response would always be that I went to kindergarten knowing that I wanted to coach college baseball.
No way.
And my dad was a coach. And so I really enjoyed playing. But it was kind of a, I'm trying to think of what are the best terms to explain this. You're really, whenever you grow up the son of a coach, you kind of have two experiences at the same time. My dad didn't coach me a whole lot. But I was always around his teams. And so it's kind of, you get the experience of a player and you get the experience of a coach kind of working in kind of parallel worlds. And so, that's really the earliest memories that I have of sport weren't necessarily playing. They were just being involved whenever he was coaching. And my mom was also in education, so she's a teacher as well. And the last time I spoke publicly, I didn't give her the credit that I really should from a role model standpoint. My mom's parents were farmers, and she worked one job her entire adult life. She worked on a farm growing up and then went to college and had the same job for 41 years, I think. She taught English and Spanish in high school, and one of the most disciplined, hardworking people that I have ever been around. And so I was extremely fortunate in that regard, to have two really driven people that just, you know, not that it wasn't, it was what I would consider a very traditional American upbringing, but they were just, it was very palpable that associating a high standard with whatever we were doing was very important to both my parents. And I have spoken about that with my dad publicly before. I haven't given my mom the credit that she deserves just publicly from a speaking standpoint, but both of them had such an impact on me, just that if you're going to do something, there's just a certain way that you're going to do it. I can remember being 10 years old and my dad telling me that you don't get to pick what you try hard at. And I can remember what I was wearing and where I was standing whenever I heard him say that. And so, you know, I'm getting a little bit long-winded talking about it, but was very, very fortunate that my earliest role models were both of my parents. And not everybody is that fortunate. Sometimes the role models come from outside the home, and that's great too. But I was lucky enough that I didn't have to look any further than my living room for really my two earliest role models.
And then phenomenal. Shout out to parents. Here's another testament, y'all. As a listener, if you're a parent and you got kids in the house, you matter big time, right? Just know that. Settle into that. Let it inspire you a little bit. Andy, man, share with me, mom and dad. Give me some names, man, so this can be real for me. What's your mom's name?
My mom's name is Donna. My dad's name is Bill.
All right, man. Donna, Bill. They still living, brother? Or are they?
They are, both of them. Both
of them. Tipping my hat, man, to Donna and Bill and the impact they've had on your life. Any siblings, man? Were you an only child?
Yeah, I've got a sister named Casey. She coaches too. And
no way.
Yeah, I always tell people I'm the third best coach in my family. So you guys are getting the short end. I would say my dad's the best coach in my family. My sister will get mad about that. She goes second. and I come third. So I wonder why people are, you know, having to scrape the bottom of the barrel to get their gas when I get any credit on any coaching, you know, any type of public credit, I always come back with the same thing. I'm not even the best coach in my own family. So that's really good that it keeps you humble and keeps you grounded for sure.
No doubt. I'm not going to let you move on quite yet because I have something here that I think really resonates with me. And I just want you to provide a bit more context for the listeners. You mentioned a 10-year-old memory and an impact that your father had. And you said the words, and I don't know if I got them right. I've tried to write them down. And here they are. I quote, "You don't get to pick what you try hard at," end quote. What does that mean, man? Can you settle in with some context here?
I don't even think he realized what he was saying whenever he said it, which in my opinion, from a leadership standpoint, you know, planning and everything's important, but relatability and just organic authenticity is really where the magic happens. I mean, you can do all the planning in the world you want, but when you really care about the people that you're trying to have an impact on, the best stuff is the stuff that just comes from your heart or your soul or however you want to word it. We're mowing my grandpa's yard and I had finished one side of the house and he asked me if I had done it or if I was done. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you know, like, are you sure? And I said, well, yes, sir. And he said, you're telling me that that's the best that you can do, you know? And I, at that point, knew not to say anything else. And I knew. And he just said, I want to tell you something. Like, you don't, for the rest of your life, you know, you're old enough now that you don't get to pick what you try hard at. And he was always great about, he never made me do anything. And he'd say, I don't care what you do. And in a lot of ways, he didn't care if I went and helped him mow or not, right? But if I was going to do it, then we're going to do it. And that's something that's always really stuck with me. He never put pressure on me to play. They never put pressure on me to be involved in certain activities. But if we're going to do something, you need to associate some type of standard with it. And one of your last guests that I was listening to shared a little bit of a similar story about the pride that he had in his last name. He didn't really say that, but it was kind of implied that, you know, hey, this is not how we do things here. And I think that, you know, if you can get in that mindset, I was really fortunate, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect at it all the time. And there's been times in my life that I wished I didn't hear that all the time, because it would be easier sometimes to be a little more relaxed in certain settings. But if I've got to land on one side of the coin, I would rather, you know, land on the side of high standards than land on the side of low standards or being, you know, selective about what you apply standards to, because I think that can be a really, really slippery slope. So, you know, I don't think he realized at the time what he was saying. I don't think he realized at the time the impact that it would have on me. And I don't know that I really got it then, but it kind of planted a seed that I would at least remember from time to time. And I knew that if I didn't do things a certain way, that it wasn't okay. Not in a super negative or authoritative way, but hey, if we're going to do something, then hey, let's do it. And that was, you know, planted then. And I still, like I said, I had on red shorts and a white shirt. I mean, I can remember what I was wearing whenever I heard it. I'm 35 years old now, and so I am very, very thankful and blessed that he was that kind of man and also took that type of interest in me, for sure.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Again, you don't get to pick what you try hard at. Coming from Bill Schatzley to young 10-year-old Andy. And let me tell you what, y'all, what I hear in this statement. We're talking about effort, right? I'm hearing effort and just a different word choice, you know? And I can't tell you how many people have come on this show and they're high performers and they try to attribute one of the reasons for the success in life. And it's, hey, I just worked damn hard, right? And in the home for you, what we're happening here, what is going on, in my opinion, is there's the beginning of expectation management being discussed between a son and a dad. I love it, man. Absolutely love it. And, you know, it's what we're talking about is leadership in the home at a young age, in my opinion. At least that's what I'm teasing out when you share this story. So thank you, man, for sharing that. Y'all take note. If you're 15 years old and you're cutting grass, listen to Andy. If you're 35 years old and you have a 10-year-old who's cutting grass, maybe challenge them with that statement. Hey, man, let's continue here. And I want to just ask you, right? What do you remember, if anything, from a learning perspective about leadership and or about teamwork from being exposed and active in competitive youth and college sport?
Oh, man. That's a really good question. It is, for the sake of, you know, being concise here.
Yeah. I hear you. It was not a great question, was it?
It's too wide open.
So no, let's go top.
Perfect. It was just a constant education because
sure. There's
just always issues with leadership. And I got a chance to see that from both my mom and my dad and the teams that I was playing on. And mm-hmm. Whenever you are, when you're the son of people that are in leadership positions, you see things a little bit differently. I mean, even on the teams that you're on. And so you're a little, I think I was much more conscious of not complaining about authority and keeping those type of opinions to myself, because I know that leadership's not easy and I know that you're not going to make everybody happy. And I'd kind of seen the other side of it. And, but probably my top, memories, from a younger age of just being, exposed to leadership is just the benefits of what you were talking about there. Playing specifically high school football, and putting, I would say just to not one specific event, but once you, and not a week's worth of work, right? Not a day's worth of work, even though that there is some satisfaction in the micro, but from a macro standpoint of playing high school football, for example, and working at something for 6, 7, 8 years from however old you are when you all start playing together until you have senior night and it's all over. The feeling of satisfaction at the end of that, when you know that, you know, maybe you don't win the Super Bowl, but that, you know, there's nothing else that you could have done. And there is nothing else that our group could have done any different. The level of satisfaction and the peace of mind that you get from that, from being part of a group and a group pursuing a goal, is really the reason that I do this for a living outside of helping people. And so I would just say that would be the number one thing, just the level of group satisfaction that you get both on a daily basis and at the end of it from that level of effort, from that level of investment, I think is just so beneficial. And helps you, gives you so much perspective moving forward that what you said, the benefits of sports in a non-traditional classroom, that's a really good way of wording that. That would be the number one thing that I got from it. Just that if a group does things right, and if you do things right to try to do your part within that group, when you get to the end of the road, win or lose, it is a super, a satisfying experience and beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, man, I love it, man. Again, just kind of trying to recap your reflection here when you're sharing about your journey as a competitive athlete at the youth level, at the college level. What'd you learn about leadership? What'd you learn about teamwork? There's two things, actually, I heard that you shared, Andy. Number one is, hey, don't complain, right? Don't complain. And what does that mean for me? It means learn how to be a really good follower, right? Because you got to follow well prior to stepping in to leading. And you might need to move in and out of both those different dynamics. Hey, I'm leading now and I'm following now. Hey, now I'm leading, now I'm following. So that's a strong takeaway I got from what you shared there. And kind of how you kind of overlaid that with just being, you know, as part of your dad in this leadership role and its impact it had upon you. But don't complain, be a great follower. The second thing I heard is, and you know, just put in the work, another call out to effort, right? And what resonated with me deeply is a quote I'll go to, and I won't get this right, but it's biblical if I can do this right. You know, I ran the good race. I fought the good fight. When I look at my life, there's been lots of moments of defeat. But as I reflect back on my decision-making, if I could feel this way that you communicated, I felt like I did a good job as a teammate. I felt like I did a good job as a manager or leader of a team, or even in my own family, right? If you just put in the work and the effort, regardless of outcome. And it's even hard for me to say regardless of outcome because I want to damn win every time. But thanks, man, Andy, for that reflection. Let's continue here, man, and let's stay on sport here. And I'm just curious, man, a lot of baseball, a lot of sport in general. You talked about football too. I'm just curious. I always love to ask this question of folks that are coaching and playing at the levels that you have. What memories might come to mind in this moment as you get this chance to reflect about just the game of baseball for you? Top one, if you have it, three, if you got a few. What are you able to share maybe about this game and its impact on your life?
One caveat. Okay. I would consider myself and the guys that have played for me. I'm a pretty hard nosed guy and, I'm a horse's rear end a pretty large percentage of the time, I think, especially early on. But like, just like anything, I think the yin's got to equal the yang and I can't really help it. I'm a pretty emotional guy. Period. So if I start crying, I know you say that you don't edit this stuff, but you might have to, if I start blubbering, talking about somebody, you know, you might have to either translate for me or we can go back and do it again later. The one thing that I would say about memories before I pick a couple is that I think one characteristic, one thing about leadership that I think people should really understand is that if you really care about the people that you're leading, the stage doesn't really matter. The emotional reaction that certain events elicit from me is really pretty consistent regardless of the stage. Regardless of whether it was winning a national championship in 2009, which was awesome. I also coached the JV team there in Lubbock in 2009. And no scholarships, no locker room. Know anything, and we got 90 minutes to practice 4 days a week. And I cried when we won the national championship, and I cried when the JV season was over. Because if you're invested in something, it's going to elicit an emotional reaction. So really, regardless of stage, my favorite, a couple of years ago, I was really fortunate. We had an incredible group of players whenever I was at Harding. And we had gotten off to a tough start the year before and were able to turn it around and had played pretty consistent the following season. And we're just in a position where the conference race was really tied. A very small percentage of the conference makes the conference tournament, which is ridiculous, but that's another conversation for another time. Nobody else cares about the dynamics of the Great American Conference but me. But we had to sweep a doubleheader on the last day of the season. To make the tournament, and we had to win a series, and we lost on Friday night, And, you know, all the people that, hey, you guys, we were playing so well that, you know, all the people that are outside of the bubble of the group, you know, there's no way you're not going to win twice, right? And then you lose on Friday night, and then everybody flips on you. You know, there's no way we're going to win two tomorrow, which is why I think you have to be really careful about who you listen to. But we talked that night. I'll keep the specifics of the meeting to myself. We come out the next day, and, like, when – you know, able to win the first game with just an incredible effort and played so well, I don't think anybody could have beat us. And then we grind out the second game and the satisfaction of the seniors to know that they'd really put the time in and had really helped the program establish a footprint. And you could just tell that that's what they were trying to do. It wasn't about making a tournament. It wasn't about chasing any type of championship. It's about leaving something better than you found it. And being able to watch a couple of those guys specifically, the satisfaction that they got from that and knowing that they had done what they set out to do, I would say – has to be up there. I'll, you know, walking in the doors of a spring training facility was awesome. But just to be honest, not any more awesome than that day in Russellville, yeah. Arkansas, you know? So,
yeah, man.
Yeah. So that's, I would pick that day. So if I could go back and relive any day, you know, now that we're in 2020 and all of us are in kind of strange dynamics, if I could go back, to pick any day, from a baseball standpoint, I would probably pick that one.
Yeah. What a great story of, in my mind, resiliency, effort, commitment, love, maybe, high-level competence. And if you're listening, I mean, I just listed out four things that are pretty important to just your tool bag of life, right? We're talking about the game of baseball in this moment, but I guarantee that anyone can recall or identify with the time when they got knocked down and they had to get back up really quick, perform, compete in order to continue to achieve a result that they were looking for, right? How many times does it apply to our adult professional workplace environment? That's why I love sport, y'all. Love it. Because we experience these things. In this case, we're talking college athletes, right, Andy?
Yes, sir.
You think these boys drew upon this later on in life?
Oh, that's the whole reason you do it. And I think that sometimes whenever you talk about not complaining, I think that a lot of times people, a lot of the reasons for complaining is they can't see the big picture. Like they can't see the forest for the trees because they're completely worried about the outcomes and winning and losing games and playing time. And the reality of it is, you know, if the average American life expectancy is 72 years old or something like that, right? And nobody plays a very small percentage, like 1% of the population is going to play past the age of 22 anyway. Mm-hmm. But even if you are, like nobody plays past 40, right? And so you're talking about like you're going to spend half your life not playing. Like it doesn't – it's just the results of the games are not the point. That – the benefit that you get. And I think if people would realize that and realize that, you know, it takes a little bit of the pressure off. And I think it can provide some clarity on really the purpose behind it, because it's not about the weights and it's not about playing time. It's about the experience. And it's about being a part of a group and giving of yourself and making an investment and enjoying the ride. And I think if people realize that a little more about the real purpose of sports, and the real benefits of it, that I think that's the first step. I think in that type of perspective, I think can stop a lot of complaining or a lot of negativity before it ever starts.
Absolutely, man. Could not agree with you more on that reflection. Would love to continue here in this moment and talk about you as a coach. And specifically, what I'd love to hear from you is why coach, man, right? What inspired you to coach? I mean, you talked about you know, you knew when you were in kindergarten, that's what you wanted to do. But I got to believe that there's some way in which it developed as you got older. And I just finished this incredible USA football certification program online as a youth coach, because if it's your first time listening to the show, I have my heart on fire for coaching youth sport. I coach any sport that I can, basketball, football, baseball, coach them all. And I'm settling into the fall season here in 2020 with my 10U tackle football team. And I wrote down kind of my purpose statement, because this incredible, and if you're out there and you're a youth coach, or you want to coach or thinking about coaching and the game of football, go to USA Football and see the incredible content they have. But they challenged me in this course to write down my coaching purpose statement. And I just want to share with you in this moment, as a lead in to Andy's question on why do you coach, Andy, and what inspired you to coach. Here's what I came up with in my own life. Why coach? I'm talking no money, y'all. I'm talking just volunteering my time, but it's not about the money. And that's not why I coach. Here's what I wrote, and I'll share with my athletes here in about 3 weeks. I coach to inspire you in your journey to become a young man of high character through the deliberate discomfort and celebratory experience of playing tackle football. The game of football is hard, emotional, and rewarding. So is the game of life. So my purpose as your coach is to develop players who value hard work, who are trusted, who care for others, who lead, and who will go on after football with the confidence to make positive changes in their life, their family, their community, and in the world. Hey, y'all, that's why I coach 9 and 10-year-olds running around on a football field, right? But this ain't about me. This is about this incredible professional coach, Andy. And so, Andy, man, I'm just curious, man. Do you have any alignment with me and my purpose and why I coach? If not, great. Who cares? I just want to hear from you, man. Why coach, brother?
Well, good luck following that, right? I'm going to go back and listen to this and steal that. I would say I'm in complete alignment with it. I've never really thought about doing anything else. It comes relatively naturally to me, the navigating kind of group dynamics. That doesn't mean that there's not a lot of effort involved. Jack Thomas, who works in economic development for the state of Arkansas now, who was actually on the team that I talked about a couple years ago.
No way.
Well, he and I spoke last night on the phone about you know, public speaking, and just he and I talk about a lot of different things. But
he's had an impact on your life for sure, man. Shout out to Jack.
He is so impressive, and he is just so polished and always has been. And he and I always talk about, like, that part of it doesn't come supernaturally to he and I. It requires a lot more elbow grease to appear polished than what a lot of other people do. But just kind of bringing that back to the effort that we talked about earlier, but it doesn't mean that it's easy, but it's leading has come somewhat natural. And I don't want to say that I'm just meant to do this, but I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I've just always felt that way. And I've never really had any other thoughts to kind of contradict that. I can't think of what else, when you and I were speaking a couple weeks ago about what else would you be doing. I think I probably would have joined the service if it wasn't for this. I just enjoy being on a team, and I enjoy being a part of a group, and I enjoy having a goal, and I enjoy pursuing it, and not really in the kind of the business sector. I just enjoy service, I think. Not to sound self-gratifying, but that's just always, nothing else has ever really interested me. And I think your purpose statement or mission statement is perfect. I've never worded it that good. And so I'll probably go back and steal that, and I'll footnote you in it whenever I use it. But, you know, one thing that I always would say here, if you really want to get into why, especially the professional side is a little bit different and I'm new to it. Ultimately I have to try to help people, and I have to provide for my family. And sometimes those things are completely in line. Sometimes they're slightly at odds, and you have to navigate it a little bit differently, but not really. You don't have to compromise your values. You don't have to compromise why you've gotten into it in the first place. It gets a little tougher to walk, and I'll let you know in a couple of years, hopefully, if I'm able to stay in it, how much more difficult it is to walk on the professional side. But I think you can help people in whatever sphere you're operating in. But what I would always tell people at Harding is, when we would try to bring things back about why things are important, I feel like our country needs husbands and fathers a lot more than it needs shortstops and right fielders. And if you are neglectful of that, and neglectful of the lessons that you can learn from sport to help those things, like we said before, I mean, I would say that's why I'm doing it. You're trying to help people understand that if they can hold themselves to certain standards and if they can stay disciplined enough to certain processes, that they've got a chance to benefit themselves and ultimately benefit their families. I would say that's why I do it.
I love it, man. Thanks for sharing. Super informative as you kind of walk through the reason why you coach and continue to coach. Because in my opinion, especially now as you step into the professional workspace as a coach, pretty volatile environment, man. I thought long and hard about coaching at the high school, college, and pro level. And that's one of the things that really scared me about it is as many places you move and hard to kind of settle in with roots. I did enough of that in my life in the military. I wanted to provide a bit more stability and predictability in this next season of life. But thanks for sharing, man. I think it's helpful. Let's continue to talk about you as a coach. And you know, hey, man, you've excelled, brother, no doubt. Some national championships, some conference championships, the opportunity to work in the pro space now with the Los Angeles Angels. And I would just love for you to share with the listeners, you know, what are those roles and responsibilities as a manager, as a head coach of a baseball team? And when you think about this, and you may say, hey, Court, good gracious, bro, how much time do we have? You know what I'm saying? Because there's probably that much to it. I would just love for you to maybe think about considering framing your response in and around what are the top 1 to 3 challenges that you face as that manager, as that head coach, in your response?
My first response is I am really anti singular pronouns. And I think that's a pretty good habit to get in if you're going to be a leader. So when you say that I've excelled, we've excelled, because I haven't, as a coach, I haven't done anything. I haven't gotten a hit since I started coaching. I haven't made one play since I started coaching. I've done more harm than good, maybe in some ways. I've been very fortunate. Some really good players, and guys that have pushed me. I would say that I am a better coach now than I was 6 or 7 years ago. But I didn't set out to become a better coach. We had a bunch of players at Harding that were so committed and so hungry that, like, you feel like you got to keep up. And anytime that I would, if I felt lazy or stagnant, it would just the source of trying to improve and develop and improve on our systems and improve your own background and your own capabilities just really stem from trying to do right by them. And then as far as the roles of a manager, I think it's really simple. I can get it down to one. You're trying to create an environment, and that's really it. You get to decide, well, actually the organization really gets to decide what kind of environment they want created. And then it's your job to go do that with a bunch of guys from really diverse backgrounds, in a very fatiguing and Groundhog Day setting of finding ways to balance the yin and yang of making sure guys are professional, but make sure that they enjoy coming to work, and making sure that guys are engaged and disciplined and hard-nosed, but that it's still loose enough that guys still enjoy it, and it, you know, where the pressure doesn't outweigh the pleasure. That's a term from Joe Madden, who's at the top of the rung with the Angels, that I steal all the time. And so I would say it's really simple. It's just the environment that you create. That's what you're trying to do. It's a very layered task. It's a very difficult task. And fortunately for me, if and when anything ever does get back to normal, we had an incredible staff that we were going to go to Orem with. And really what I viewed my job is to just kind of set some parameters of what we want the environment to look like and uphold the value of the Angels and let those guys do their jobs. And really feeling like if I took care of the hitting coaches and the pitching coaches, if I made sure that those guys had what they needed and those guys had the support that they needed, that we could all go create that environment together. So, I think that's really that's the role of any manager, is to make sure that the systems are right and make sure that the environment's right. Yeah. And instead of complaining about the people, instead of evaluating people all the time, in my opinion, you should evaluate your systems first and then your environment second before you move on to the people. So.
Mm. Thanks for sharing that, man. Great perspective there. And hey man, spoken like a true coach. And you're open to that one with this idea that I didn't excel at all. We've excelled. And I get it, right? I think that's humility is what we're talking about here. It's the humble brag. But check it out, man. The Angels did not hire the Harding baseball team. They hired you, right? So, you know, I'm celebrating you. You're the featured guest, and we want to hear about what it is that you think you need to do. Again, in combination with the team and assistants and whatnot. But again, there's only one manager, boss, and it's you. And you talked about, you know, what you need to do, what you see your role and your responsibilities as that head MF-er in charge of that program. And it's create an environment. And I love it, man, because this parlays, in my opinion, to anybody that's in a managerial role of any team, even if it's just two people. And guess what, y'all? Two people's a team, right? It's what kind of environment can you create? And I'll tell you what, I've been on a ton of teams where, you know, the team's behavior seems to fall in line with the behavior of the manager, of the person in charge. So you do have a significant impact, and you talked about the environment that you think you need to create in the systems. So thanks for sharing it. I want to tap into some knowledge here in this moment for the listeners. Got a lot of folks that love sport listening to the show. Either they're playing themselves or they're leading a family of young kids that are playing. And so, Andy, man, could you just share with us, in your opinion, where are kids being recruited from these days to play at the college level? I'm experiencing my first year of travel baseball right now with my son. Right? We're actually going to Myrtle Beach this weekend to play. Fired up about it, right? Because it's more than just the game. It's the experience that comes from dad and son jumping in the car, staying in a hotel, and playing sport. I'm fired up about it, man. He's excited too. I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, a lot of recruit comes out of travel baseball. Not even many folks looking at high school baseball anymore. Or what are the other areas? So just curious, man. Could you just share some thoughts, man? Where you recruited and where you know folks are recruiting kids from these days across the country to play at the college level?
It's a really good question, and it is completely situation specific. There are certain schools who might be, you know, relatively exclusive to the travel ball circuit. In the same realm court, there's going to be other schools because of the nature of their and here's the thing, not to get too deep into it, but with college baseball and really any partial scholarship sport, for example, Division I baseball only has 11.7 scholarships to field a roster of 35 guys, which is ridiculous. And I don't work for the NCAA anymore, so I can say whatever I want. Like, it's an absolute joke that they're asking guys to put a team together on 11 scholarships. Division II is worse. They've only got 9. And so what you're forced
– Yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to interrupt you here, but that's incredibly insightful for me, and I hope for the listeners. Like, I didn't even know that. Yeah. So what a gift. Thank you for sharing that. Continue, please.
And so what ends up happening is you have to develop some type of recruiting strategy that allows you to max out whatever your scholarship situation is, right? How do the schools blend what athletic money they have with the academic or need-based money that they have? And yeah, that kind of allows them to set their target audience. And so there are so many ways to be noticed, and there are so many different avenues to get to where you want to go. The travel ball circuit is one. It's not the only one. And especially with the capability of iPhones, I mean, this is going to sound really simple, but the cameras on that are better than, you know, half the cameras that you can go buy on a shelf somewhere. And the ability to get video out on Twitter through recruiting services. I mean, Travel Ball does work. The Showcase Circus does work, but it's not the only way. And so it's not really a cop-out answer, but there is no one answer to that question. I mean, the Power Five schools, such a small percentage of guys get a chance to do that. But, you know, they are going to be really heavy into certain, you know, travel organizations or certain travel tournaments or whatever. But at the same time, you know, if you're left-handed in 96, like, I don't think Clemson or LSU or, you know, the University of Texas is going to have any trouble finding about you or hearing about you. So, you know, it's the nature of partial scholarship sports, really, you know, anything outside of football and basketball. There's all kinds of different avenues because there are all kinds of different financial structures for those teams that everybody just tries to match their strategy to whatever situation they have.
I hear you, man. It's interesting as I listen to your response here, and I didn't think of this question until in the moment. So you absolutely can reject it if it's not something you want to comment on. But you know, I'm just curious, man, you know, as a former coach at the college level, you know, what kind of parents turn you off and what kind of parents are you open to? Meaning, like, does it make sense for me as a parent of a kid, if I'm listening right now, to be, you know, a marketing person? Meaning, hey, you know, sending the video, pushing footage to someone's Twitter account at the coach level. I mean, you know, what should parents be doing, man, if it's not the head coach for the team that they're playing that's that advocate? Yeah, I mean, what makes sense? What's like, hey, man, you're a crazy parent, don't want to see you part of my program, but then you love your kid and you want to kind of get them out there. You know, I don't know, man. I'm just interested. Like, context. Here's some context. I played football for rural North Carolina. Like, we played both ways. I maybe fielded a team of 30 kids, high school football, y'all, in Elkin, North Carolina. My coach was not incredible, right? He came to my wedding. Love him. But he was not a guy that was actively engaged with pushing us to the next level, you know? So, again, man, I'm sorry, long question there. Hopefully there's something you can sink your teeth into, but what can parents do to market their kids that makes sense from a coach's perspective?
I think it's just all in the wordings, and it is a necessary evil. It used to turn me off a lot, but at the same time, too, I don't know if it's just getting older or, you know, I think it's all about your motives, and I think it's just like anything else in life. It's not necessarily what you say, but how you say it. And sure, there are times that it's one of those things. It's a little bit hard to explain in just an audio format. It's kind of a feel thing for coaches. For me, like, there are parents that were really upfront and involved, and you kind of get the sense that it's never going to be an issue, that they're, you know, respectful of the lines and respectful of boundaries, but they're also advocating for their child. And then there are just some type of vibe that you can get sometimes from people where you think, you know, this could potentially be an issue. And it's kind of a feel things for the coaches. And so I think some coaches are probably a little bit too on the other side of it. I think it's an easy target. And I think it's an easy thing to say, oh, we don't want them or whatever. But it's, there have been parents of that have hurt their child's opportunity with us here without going into specifics.
Sure.
But I think it's just like anything else that you were doing, any type of difficult conversation that you're trying to have with somebody, I think approaching it with a balance of candor and humility, I think is a really good recipe for getting on the same page. And I would say, ask the coach the question and be very, very authentic and transparent about your motives. Don't try to keep anything veiled. Because just like anything else in life, most of the time you can smell that. And so if you're authentic and candid and not interested in blurring the lines and not, you know, like, hey, I want to advocate for my child now, but once he's in the program, I understand that there's going to be lines that we don't cross professionally, no different than any other realm or sphere, right? It would be ridiculous for me to walk into one of our players' parents' office, right, and talk to him about how he does his job. That would be a ridiculous, like, for me to go in and tell somebody who works for insurance company, you know, hey, you're really targeting the wrong people when I know nothing about it or have no experience in it. And so, I mean, that would be ridiculous. And I think people need to respect the other side of that coin also. So I think just being candid and authentic, and then also understanding that there needs to be some lines that people don't cross for everything to stay healthy. I think, you know, for me, that goes for any difficult conversation you have. The balance of candor, humility, and authenticity, I think, is a recipe that is never going to steer you wrong.
Yeah, it's something I struggle with, and my kids are young, 11 and 9. But I am on social media now more than I ever have been, never was on all my years of service. But I'm starting to see, like, the dad publish the video marketing the son who's playing. And he's like, hey, looking forward to the season. Here's my son, you know, John Wayne. His huddle video already got 1,200 views, right?
I mean, right.
You want to get your kid out there, especially if everyone else is doing it, but how do you do it the right way?
Not to interrupt you. I think there's always a way to do it tastefully. I received some pressure here, a little bit. Pressure is the wrong word. People were pushing me here to share just some experience I've had, because self-promotion is ultimately what we're talking about here. And that makes certain people uncomfortable. Some people enjoy it. Some people it really bothers, but really in today's day and age, in a lot of ways, it's a necessary evil. Mm-hmm. And for me, an example of what I tried to do to be a little more public with my thoughts, but also not try to overstep or appear that I was trying to bring more attention to me than the program itself. I started receiving some requests and a little bit of a push to share some of our infield stuff, for example, on social media. And I was always really anti that. Mm-hmm. And some of our players even were telling me, like, hey, from a recruiting standpoint, we got to start getting some of this stuff out there. Sure. And I one of the non-negotiables that I have whenever we were starting to put that stuff together, and they helped me because they've got more feel for that stuff than what I do or did, is that I said, we're not doing anything. The first words of every tweet are going to be the Harding baseball Twitter account's Twitter handle. It's not going to say Andy Schatzley's infield stuff. It's going to say, you know, at Harding base, infield approach and drill work. And that's going to be the heading, and we'll put everything else under there. But I mean, I'm not doing anything that doesn't have the brand in front of it. And I think there are ways to do things. That was my best effort. Some people might've still viewed it as self-promotion. That is not how I intended it. But it did benefit the program. It did. And so, but we just tried to balance putting some content out and making sure that it was tasteful at the same time.
Yeah. Love it, man. Well said, helpful, insightful. Hope someone's taken away a bit from that advice as they continue to love their kid and really market their kid for that opportunity at the next level. Let's transition here in a moment away from advice for the parent and their behavior and actions. And let's just talk about the athlete himself, man. What are you looking for in a baseball player? And you may say, hey, Corey, hey, man, I can't tell you that. I can maybe tell you what I'm looking for in a catcher or a pitcher or a shortstop. And if that's the case, then just pick a position, man, that works for you. But in this moment, I would love to give some advice to the athlete that's listening from a pro coach here and an extensive college coach on this is kind of what I need you to be as an athlete to get a shot to play in college. Or
two things. Well, from a recruiting standpoint, I always say that the guys have to check two boxes. They got to be good enough, number one, and then they've got to be one of us, number two. And that both those were equally important. So I think there's got to be the balance of the tangible and the intangible. Number one, that would be the first thing that I would say. The character has to match the physicality. But what I would say is overall athleticism and competitiveness. I'm not a big specialization guy at all. I think guys need to be good teammates, and they need to be as athletic as they could possibly be. And I think there are so many benefits from playing football. I'm such a pro, you know, playing football whenever you're a young guy and never getting away from it. I think there are lessons you can learn from that you can't learn in other sports. But, you know, the advice that I would give or the things that I would tell them to do is realize the type of person you are, number one, this sounds cliche, is just as important for the most part as how good an athlete you are. Because even if you're an incredible athlete, a first rounder, if there are some personal attributes, at some point that stuff's going to rear its head. Sure. if you don't have the intangible piece there. But I would say put some processes together that benefit your overall athleticism and strength, right? And then develop the discipline to stick with those processes and then evaluate them, right? And then once you've done that, once you've built a process and you've seen it through and you can evaluate it, right, then you can build a better process the next time. Mm-hmm. And I would continue that cycle and however long you want to do it. If it's 1 week at a time or it's 1 month at a time, that is the most, if I was 16 years old, that's what I would tell myself, is to start writing some stuff down and put some stuff in place so that you can go back and look at what you did and look at what it did for you. And then, you know, rinse, repeat, and try to do it better the next time. But it needs to be geared toward overall athleticism. And I think at some point you've got to evaluate your process.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate you sharing that, man. You talked a lot about just being an athlete. You had kind of the embrace of multi-sport athlete, I think I heard, is important for you as you look from a recruiting perspective. And you said, hey, man, we're just looking for guys that compete. And I would say that, you know, and your advice here, certainly if you're inspired to play, you can create process. If you can't do it by yourself, find someone that can help you. But it's a little bit more challenging just to have the innate competitor inside you. You know, what I can tell you is that sometimes it's just there and it's part of the person, a little bit harder to develop and train. So anyway, a little bit of my perspective too on that, and given what you shared. I want to talk about current environment, man, economically, socially, from the pandemic, specifically of COVID-19. So if you don't mind, would love to just hear your perspective on the impact it's had. I mean, you're a brand new manager, don't think you've played or practiced yet, might be wrong, but you know, we're deep into where we should be playing a lot of baseball, right? I'm watching TV, excited about opening day, but I think it's actually tonight. If not tonight, it's tomorrow. So I'm just curious, man, from your perspective, how has this impacted the game of baseball at the player level, coaching level, support staff level? You know, if you could comment on that, you know, emotionally, what impact has it had on you? I mean, I just talked to a close friend of mine who's a head football coach, and he's like, he's really frustrated because what he feels like he was born to do and loves to do, it continues to be placed on hold. And he's frustrated. He wants to get out there and coach and compete and play. So any thoughts, man, you could share with us on that topic, the pandemic and its impact to your life and the teams and the players that you work with, and then maybe what the future looks like. I mean, looks like baseball is going to start again. Don't know if that is trickling down to your level. Thoughts, man.
It's going to be a really layered response, and I'm going to be, it's okay that this podcast is a little bit raw, right? I'll be as candid as I possibly can be. It's been, and this is the other thing I would say about leadership too, is that like progress isn't linear, right? I think a lot of people think that it is. PJ Fleck has got a video where he put out where he draws an arrow like straight up. Like people think progress looks like this, like it doesn't. It looks like this, and it's, there's dips and there's valleys and there's everything else. And I would consider myself reasonably tough-minded and pretty disciplined, and this has been extremely difficult for me, just to be honest. And that's one other thing that I would tell leaders: you don't have to be perfect. There's going to be times that you really struggle, and it's really unavoidable. And none of us are Superman. And this has been, you know, I really thought I'd had my mettle tested before. Nothing like this. Nothing like this level of uncertainty. Really this level of uncertainty on all fronts. Sure. And it is, we just, between me and you, I mean, my family needs this thing to go good. We need the big league season to be smooth. We need them to find ways to get some type of normalcy back up and running, and the discipline to adhere to these protocols, because there's a lot on the line, not just for me and my family, but Court, you talk about like the economic impact of this. These minor league families or groups of families that own these minor league franchises, you know, it's impacted us. But them, I mean, their entire source of income is centered around, you know, a 5 or 6 month season and the selling of advertising and ticket sales and all that type of thing. There's an entire economic environment that has just been gutted. And those were pretty stable jobs, and not nobody's, you know, getting rich and retiring in the Cayman off of those, but you're talking about middle-class America with, you know, advertising people, marketing people, grounds crew people, who are really accomplished at what they do, and all of a sudden it's just gone. And I know that, you know, minor league baseball is not the only industry that has experienced that, but just the level of uncertainty is real. I mean, I think all this is pretty unparalleled, really. And so, you know, the biggest thing for me is to attempt to control my thoughts as best you can and try to stay pretty present, which is easier some days than others. But it's, you know, I think everybody in sport, really, if that's the industry that you're in, needs all of this to go as smooth as what it possibly can. And I don't know if I answered your question or not. I got off in the weeds, and that's, if there's one thing that would rattle me, I could stay pretty on task with a lot of stuff. You start talking about COVID and you start, that's the one thing that can kind of shake me up. But, you know, I feel this way. I still feel this way. I feel like good stuff's coming. I do. I don't know if that's, that doesn't mean, and I've been on all sides of this. I have cried, I've cussed, I've done, and everything in between, about kind of the way stuff's going. I was there for about 3 weeks, something like that. And all of a sudden, I mean, it went from life is completely normal to being on a flight that night. I mean, literally in the same day. And, so, yeah, it's unique for everybody in the country everywhere. And it's has really challenged me to kind of put your money where your mouth is. You think you've been tested before, but I don't know that any of us really in the country, if you're in an industry that's been affected, have ever been tested like this. So yeah. It's kind of put up or shut up, and do all the things that you ask your players to do all the time and you pretend it's easy, this is a pretty good gut check to kind of put you back in that realm and really, and give a little more empathy for people maybe whenever they're not at their best, for sure.
Yeah, man. I mean, do you, and is there a plan for the Owls to play this year?
No, it's completely canceled. So there's no minor league seasons are going to take place anywhere. That's from AAA on down. There is a chance if this goes smooth, what they've got is every major league team has got the big league team at one site, and then they've got what they're calling a taxi squad where they're keeping about 30 other players at some location that's inside 100 miles of the stadium for them to be able to call guys up or send guys down or if there's injuries or whatever. And so there's a few guys that are active. There are some rumors of maybe attempting to do some type of fall version of spring training. And that's the other thing too. A lot of these players, very small percentage of the minor leagues are actually getting to do anything. So it's just as difficult for them. And those guys, you know, if they didn't sign for a lot of money, those guys make, you know,
they're doing something else, right?
Yeah,
they're working.
So those guys are working. And then if they're 25 or 26 and we're close to making the taxi squad, they're probably in a position where they're working a full-time job right now and trying to stay sharp enough that if they get called to Anaheim, that they're ready to go. And that is a strange dynamic. And a lot of guys, I mean, it's just, it's put everybody in a pinch. And I think it's important that we all do the best we can to try to control our minds and control our thoughts. But it has been very taxing for everybody. There's talks of contractions of the minor league next year that adds a whole nother level of uncertainty to this situation. And it is certainly a unique time. There's no doubt about that.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for just sharing some thoughts on it. I think it's helpful for people that are missing sport as just a fan, to listen and get some insight to what it's like as a coach, where this is your bread and butter, this is your livelihood, and the disruption that it has had on that, for sure. A few more questions here, man, I think, and we can wrap things up together, but I absolutely want to touch on some habits of what it is to be a great coach that you could share. Clearly you are one, and certainly have been around some great ones. You've referenced quite a few just in our sharing out here on this show. And people tune into this show because they know that the guest is going to talk about, hey, here's some of the things that enable me to be successful. So curious, Andy, in your own words, man, what are the top 2 to 5, if you have them, habits of a high-performing coach?
I would say 3. The first one's effort. That's what I always knew, that was not going to be an issue. And Jeff Steele, who we referenced earlier, really was, he was just so impressive. Like, he's never stopped. Like, I just showed up and like, he was just full bore. I mean, he is one of the tougher people, and you know him, like he can't, like he is as salty as they get sometimes and as soft as they get sometimes too, which is a really good quality to have, but he just never stopped working and he was never still. And it was like 4th and goal, like from 8 in the morning until he walked out, like in everything. And that was really contagious for me. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed helping and I enjoyed learning from him. And so the first thing I would say is effort. And then the second thing I would say is organization, right? And the effort's got to feed the organization. I think people think it's easy. Like, they see a finished product, right? Like, I did a presentation yesterday, and the PowerPoint that I gave, whenever I did the presentation, people will sometimes ask you for those. And, sure. I think nobody benefits, even in stuff like this, I don't think the listener benefits near as much as the presenter or speaker does. And not because of the presentation itself, not the PowerPoint or the presentation that you're left with. It's the process of putting the presentation together where all the gold is. And sure, it looks good as a finished product, but it was not. It was a sloppy 3 or 4 days of me not feeling good about it and changing stuff and getting feedback and this sucks and this is pretty good and this is a good idea, but I don't really know how to word it concisely. And that type of effort that feeds organization, like, and then you end up with something that can benefit the people that are under you. The process of putting that together, you come out different on the other side of it. And I think both of those things, effort and then organization, and then empathy is, I think, the third one of realizing, you know, in sports, for example, what these guys are doing is hard. It's extremely difficult. And chances are, like, they're probably, if the truth was known, better at it than what you ever were. And like the game or whatever task you've got, right? Sales gets a lot easier the further you get away from it. And it's a lot easier to hit from the coach's box than what it is from the batter's box. Like, there is no doubt about that. And I think that is critical in any type of leadership, or you're not going to have really any type of compass to guide you if you don't have empathy. So I think you got to have some effort. I think you got to be organized in what you're doing. And if you don't have that empathy, you really don't have any guiding force to help you to assist you in leading people through whatever you're trying to navigate.
Beautiful, man. Well said. Thanks, my friend, for sharing that. Certainly the right guy to talk about what a high-performing coach needs to look like from a habit place. And then last question here. Let's talk about the collective team. And in this case, unique to a baseball team. What are those foundational habits that the collective team, baseball in this case, you know, need to do from a habit place well to have success? I mean, shoot, man, you've got some conference championships, you've got a national championship. When you think about those teams, you know, what did they do that made them great?
I think there's one principle that applies to every, I think, really holistic or really competent group. Now, somebody might be able to prove me wrong on this, but I've always felt this way. It's kind of an idea that I got from Urban Meyer. And I think you can, he was talking about his coaching style, that the yin need to equal the yang, right? And that's a really good idea, where, you know, like the compassion has got to be balanced with toughness, right? And, or looseness has got to be balanced with discipline. I think if you apply that across the board to everything, like what are, you know, if that principle, I think, can be applied in any context whenever it comes to the best teams or the most high performing teams, right? Are they loose? Yes. Right? Are they very disciplined and focused? You bet they are. Right? Are there members of the group who are very type A? You bet. Are there members of the group that are very type B? Absolutely. You know, like the diversity and the balance that provides, regardless of what area you want to put out, if the yin equals the yang on any question that you ask, then you're exactly where you need to be. If you're out of balance one way or another, you know, you can be as fundamental as you want to be, but if it's not balanced with a certain level of aggression, and I'm holding my hands up like anybody can see me, but if you're not fundamental enough, it's not going to be very good. But if those fundamentals aren't aggressive enough, then it's not going to be any good either, right? If you've got a bunch of people that are really, really hard-nosed, that's awesome, right? But if it's not bad, if they're not having fun, like eventually the results are going to be compromised. And if all we have is a lot of fun and there's no amount of discipline associated with it, like that's called a frat party, you know? And like, that's not really beneficial for long-term success either. And so I think every attribute of a high performing group always stays in balance. And I think if you can keep that principle in place, I think it can really simplify and answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, man. Well said. I've never really heard it that way before. So it's a gift for me as you share that. My thoughts quickly go to this is environment. All right.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And this goes back to what you said earlier ago about what your role is as a manager is creating the environment. I would also say that in the best teams that I've seen and been a part of, the players are participatory and holding each other accountable.
Absolutely.
To those things. even more so Absolutely. Than the coaches. And when you have that leadership within a program, within the team, I think you're destined for greatness, in my opinion.
I would agree with that 100%. And I think that goes into where you have to be authoritative, right? And the yin's got to equal the yang. Like, they've got to be, it can't just be from you, right? It's got to stay in balance. And people are going to do stuff for a little bit because they have to, but that's not sustainable.
No.
Eventually,
they're
they
not
have
bought
to
in
because they want to. Right.
Because we're talking buy-in here.
Yeah. And right. If you've got a short sprint, you might be able to just, you know, bludgeon people over the head to get what you need out of them for 3 or 4 days. But, you know, if you want any type of sustainability or long-term effectiveness, people have to want to be there, and they have to want to do what you're asking them to do. And I think that there's a whole level of collaboration that can go there on giving those guys or girls input in what you're doing to help that investment from them and to help their engagement level. And honest to goodness, I know there's got to be some lines for authority, but most of the time, a single leadership figure is not smart enough to navigate everything on their own. So leaning on the people that you're leading and giving them input goes to that empathy. It also, you know, is going to ultimately yield better results, because chances are there's 2 or 3 people that are leading that are smarter than you anyway. And if you don't utilize them, I think you're being super neglectful.
Absolutely, man. Well said. Thank you so much for sharing them thoughts on high-performing teams, the collective unit, how they can excel in and around balance, and then, you know, those habits of high-performing coaches. One last question, man, as we wrap things up here together today. You know, we got, what it is, 5-4 months left in this year. You know, then we're jumping into 2021. So I'm just curious, man, what's next for you?
That's a great question. I was hoping that – I'm hoping that somebody answers that question for me soon. it's really been a test for me, because the biggest issue with 2020 for me is that level of uncertainty, and it's really outside of my control. I don't have much control over what happens next, really, in any realm of this. And so what's next for me is to try to continue to get better at keeping myself prepared so that I'm ready if and when I'm needed. What's next for me is making sure I'm not caught off guard whenever some type of clarity presents itself. That's what's next for me. And that's really the only way that I know how to word it. And I think if there's anybody out there that's in the same spot that I'm in, you're not the only person, you know, that's in. I know I'm not the only person that's in strange times now. And I am doing my best to, just like whenever you and I talked the first time, I haven't been great at this the whole time, but I'm trying to grind through it. And just like I said, the process isn't always pretty. But in short, what's next for me is making sure I'm not caught off guard if and when I'm needed.
Yeah, man. I love it. What I'm hearing is that you're stepping into some acceptance of the situation, given your profession. You're not alone, and you're focused. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited to watch you and see what happens next. And really just appreciate you coming on here and sharing some thoughts and perspectives in and around your life, your love, and how you've excelled in the things that you've done for the listeners. So, brother, I think that's a wrap on the show. What I'd love to do is just invite you to give your own signature rubber stamp on this episode, as we do with every guest that comes on here, and allow you to lead us in the high performance breakdown. And I'm going to coach you up on this real quick so that you're familiar with what's going on here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to invite you to clap, literally clap, brother, 3 times, and then speak the words boom shakalaka after your 3rd clap, alone and unafraid for the audience. And that is our high performance breakdown. And so I've got some preparatory commands, right? Because I'm an old soldier and a command of execution. And so as I prepare you here, I'm going to say, hey, Andy, break down on 3. and I'll speak the words 1, 2, 3, and that's your chance to execute, man, that breakdown. Any questions?
No, this is the only part of this thing that I've been nervous about the whole time. So the only notes I've got in front of me, like I told you before we came on, are 3 claps, boom, shakalaka, and I have absolutely no swagger. So I'll do my best to do this justice.
Yeah, the challenge is for you, me, and the listener not to laugh. That's why we do
Deal.
It. Deal. All right, man. So, hey, with incredible gratitude and celebration of our guest today, Andy, hey, my man, thank you so much for being on here and just giving us some insight to your work, how you go about it, and what just gets you fired up in life. So please, man, break us out into our day with some energy. Break down on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, brother. Little boom shakalaka.
That's the one part two. The only other thing I've got, man, is that's the one part two that my wife, who will get a huge kick out of listening to that, I do need to thank her, Court, because
Man.
You talked about a lot of different stops, and our players have had a huge role in anything that's happened to me, and I'm telling you, I literally do not know. I would be dead in a ditch somewhere if it wasn't for Sarah Shastley. So she is
Sarah. Shout out to Sarah, man. No doubt.
Any good quality that I've got, she's got it times 10. So she's the absolute best.
Hey, man. Awesome. Thank you, Sarah, for what you've done to support this man in his work, coming from Andy and coming from me. Hey, y'all. Anything else, brother? Is that it?
No, man. Thanks for the time. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, folks listening, to connect with Andy, a couple places I'd encourage you to check out. First, find him on LinkedIn, Andy Shatsley, and I'll spell that A-N-D-Y, last name S-C-H-A-T-Z-L-E-Y. Or jump on his Twitter, follow him, @Andy_Shatsley, or hey, just go to the Orm Owls website, www.milb.com/Orem, and Orem is O-R-E-M. I don't have all these handles listed in the notes of the show, so you can grab them there and connect with this incredible coach. Hey, y'all, you know how we close out with my challenge statement. Get out there in your life. Consider what Andy shared together today with us. Allow it to inspire you and chase our performance in your own way. See y'all next week. Bye.